Hey listeners, today we have a very special episode for you. There's been a recent paper on the top 10 open challenges in LLM research that has consolidated a lot of intense debate. Today, we're going to talk about RWKV models, receptance-weighted key-value models, with Eugene Chia, who is both part of the core RWKV team, CTO of a low-code AI test automation platform, and active member of the Latent Space Discord. The RWKV architecture has the potential to solve three of the top 10 open LLM challenges: increasing context length, making LLMs faster and cheaper, and designing a new model architecture. What is particularly appealing about it is that it does so by reviving the recurrent neural network, which even I have argued has been obsoleted by the transformer. It rejects the idea that attention is all you need, and replaces multi-head attention and feed-forward networks with new concepts called a time mix and channel mix, respectively. It has been trained up to 14 billion parameters, they're getting help from Eleuther and Stability AI to scale up even more, and shows competitive results on reasoning benchmarks, the same benchmarks we covered in our Benchmarks 101 episode, with similar size models, yet with linear costs and speed curves instead of quadratic ones. In a way, RWKV are promising the room temperature superconductor of LLM architectures. In other words, the parallelizability and performance of transformers without the quadratic cost. Obviously, the topic of what happens after the transformer is, in the finance terminology, what we call a low delta outcome. It's probably not going to happen, but if it does, it will be very, very big. We even discussed this a little bit in our episode with Jonathan Frankel of Mosaic ML. But since the RWKV paper was published, the idea has been somewhat independently validated, with Microsoft Research putting out the RetNet, or the retentive network, which has similar veins of what it's trying to do. And it also, of course, competes with other alternatives to the transformer, like the state space models coming out of Chris Ray's group at Stanford, S4, H3, and the Monarch Mixer that was recently announced. However, RWKV is so far the most validated of all these ideas because it is already trained up to 14 billion parameters with multiple models that you can download and generate text with today. As podcasters, we want to be the first place that you hear about new things in AI that you'll be using in work or personal life as AI engineers and enjoyers. So this presents us with a problem. We have to be early on consequential topics and things, but also high signal. Some of our favorite compliments so far, which, by the way, I've added to our about page if you want to check that. Your pods are a legitimate highlight of life for me. They're amazing. From McKay Wrigley. And from the AI Safety Memes Twitter account, which is always fun, they just simply said we're the highest signal pod for them. So we're very proud of this and want to keep it up while taking risks. Because even though we crossed 250,000 downloads just 5 months into the podcast, we're still very young and trying to figure out what kind of podcast we want to be and what kind of audience we want to have. Today is going to be one of the riskier pods for a few reasons. One, it is the first pod we're doing on a non-traditional architecture with no large Western institutional backing. Two, it is the first pod we recorded outside of the US without a regular studio, so the audio is not as good. And three, finally, it is the first pod we're doing with my Singaporean accent. I'll address each of these in turn. One, there's a significant institutional bias in Western media coverage when it comes to AI, in that if you don't come from Stanford or Oxford, or you don't work at Google or Facebook, your ideas have trouble getting attention. However, by far, the most admired organization that our guests have repeatedly mentioned is Eleuther AI, which spun up as a decentralized Discord community that independently trained the first GPT-class LLMs without a prestigious background. Eleuther has since spun off organizations like Stability AI and Conjecture, but I suspect that the RWKV community is working like the early days of Eleuther, and we have a rare opportunity to capture an oral history of it live rather than 2 years after the fact. Two, part of the latent space magic is that we try to get to know our guests and be in person with them to establish rapport, like we did in New York in our Notion AI episode with Linus Lee. Despite the lower audio quality, I think we got a much better interview with Eugene because we were able to interact with each other in person. Three, part of the joy of audio is that you get to hear the full diversity of humanity, and neither Alessio or I are American, and I like to showcase the broader world through our AI lens whenever we can. As you'll see, the RWKV story is also about the non-English rest of the world self-organizing to build the LLMs that the English-centric West has neglected, and doing so relatively successfully. We've aggressively edited this interview down to 1 hour for the audio podcast, but for those who are interested in RWKV, head over to the new Latent Space TV YouTube channel, which has the full 2 hour interview, including our screen share walk through the RWKV models, paper, and Discord, as well as digressions on Eugene's background, discussions on diffusion models and the token crisis, and the relationship between open source AI and the AI waifu husbando community. I hope you enjoy our conversation with Eugene Chia of RWKV, and if you liked it, reach out to him at Pico Creator on Discord or on Twitter and let him know.
Okay, so I'm here with Eugene. We are in Singapore. This is the first time I'm podcasting in Singapore. This is the first time I'm podcasting with my Singaporean accent. Eugene has been a very valued part of our Latent Space Discord for a while, and also diving deep onto RWKV. I think you're actually the first person that brought it to my attention as like a potential Transformers alternative. You're also CTO of UiLicious, which is a UI testing company that's in Singapore here, which is a low-code platform. I got the first demo maybe 4 years ago.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, fine, you know, you're doing testing. There wasn't an obvious AI angle. I mean, now that you explained it, it was great. But like, what was your personal, like, okay, I'm going to be the dedicated AI guy for UiLicious?
Okay, so one of the things, that I found very interesting with the huge transformer boom right now, right, is that traditionally, right, when you tell companies that you need, when you want to build your own AI, you need a really large data set. And over time, actually, the amount of data sets that you need is actually scaled down because you can just now fine-tune.
Foundation models.
Yeah, fine-tune foundation models. And when we started UiLicious, we always knew at that time, because a lot of our other companies that were launched at the same time were dealing with neural networks, that at some point, the data that we've been collecting data on, let's say, how to do testing website, is just a very specific focus. Basically, every single test that has run on our platform, unless our customer has opted out or deleted their account, basically privacy-related stuff, we actually still retain the test data. And that's something that we always felt that was useful in the long run to be able to actually build a huge training model. The irony of that was that even though we were building all those data sets, as the threshold came in and the transformer boom happened, we realized we don't actually need that big of a data set anymore to actually get a functional AI. One of the key insights, especially for people who is like trying to build on top of transformer models, pre-transformer large language models is we'll always be thinking of like in terms of like 100 gigabytes of data, 1 terabyte of data, like millions of records for all the different examples. Post-transformer, it's literally, you probably need only like 1,000 or 10,000, enough like data that you can literally get an intern a few weeks to just get it done. And you have a working model. It may not be that great, but frankly, every piece of data you add after that is a diminishing returns.
And because it's a language model, it doesn't actually have any inherent understanding that it is automating the browser. So it's presented as like a prompt answer pair. Like question answer there.
At least for our internal model that our users are using, it's presented as here's the prompt, describe your test or what you want to modify the code, and then subsequently it generates the code for you. And hindsight is now basically Copilot. I think now Copilot is adding that chat widget. Are they fully launched yet?
Yes, I actually downloaded it yesterday. I haven't actually used it yet, but it is a separate VS Code extension. So there are now three Copilot extensions shipped by GitHub because they have shipped their org chart. I'm quite friendly with that team, but it's very funny. But just to come back to you, so did you implement this with GPT-3?
So we based it off the Salesforce CodeGen model.
Okay, right.
So that was the foundation model that we built on top. We are looking into replacing it in parts, but that becomes a longer conversation.
CodeGen being the first really credible, open source, code-specific language model that was released by literally anyone, I think about 3 years ago. And then they recently released CodeGen 2.
Correct.
Any opinions on CodeGen 2 and just while we're on this topic?
In terms of like CodeGen, one big appeal for the CodeGen and even CodeGen 2 model is that Salesforce took a very clear and clean approach to the licensing.
Meaning they were very, very clear that everything that they trained on was open source.
Yeah. MIT, they didn't touch the problematic licenses.
Yeah.
So, and you can imagine.
And you think that Copilot did?
Knowing Microsoft's statement on how liberal they were about GitHub data, and they were saying they used the term that it's under fair use.
I see.
Okay. I have no reason to believe that they didn't.
Right.
But this same problem happens to actually a lot of existing CodeGen models. And that was actually the main appeal for me for actually building on top of the Salesforce CodeGen model. Mostly also because like for us, we deploy on-premise into enterprises in Europe. And they ask questions.
So what does this deploy on-premise mean? Like you pack UiLicious into a container and you give it to them?
Yeah.
And then it's like a license fee or something?
Correct.
Okay, cool. That's very interesting. Yeah, okay. I don't know if I have any other questions based on that. Anything else before we go into the reasons for alternative models?
Okay, so anything else do I have there? No, I don't really have much. For alternative models,
So let me set the premise, right? Like, Transformers have won. for now.
They have slit the neural networks.
Yes. And, you know, it seems like you have had a history since with machine learning, since before Transformers. And now they're at kind of like the peak of their power. And I see that, you know, there's a desire for alternative models for a number of reasons. But I'm very curious as to what drives your personal interest in alternative models.
So first things first, to be clear, majority of our AI is still based on Transformer, at least within my company.
Yes.
But what drove me into alternatives beyond Transformer, in essence, once we actually managed to get our bot to generate UI testing code, the most obvious next thing that our customers started asking, hey, this, let's say the test failed, can your AI now analyze my website and then tell me what's wrong and tell me what to change? Okay. Basically, they're getting lazy and lazy.
Yeah.
And that's to be
expected. Humans are very good at moving goalposts.
And we had something working for toy websites. But the one thing that we do and internally is that we look at the, I think, what was the list? Top 100, top 1,000 websites.
Okay.
And we basically just run, or we actually do run our test platform against that to see, make sure that our code works against like any front-end platform.
Well, what do you mean run your test platform, right? Because you don't have tests for them.
Yeah, we have some very rudimentary basic things like go to website, see something, click something, add to cart.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
I see.
The idea is more of like, because there's so many frameworks out there, and
you just want to make sure you cover all of them.
Yeah, and so we did the same thing for our AI. And the first thing that it died on was literally Amazon.
Why? Oh, 5 megabytes.
I think you heard me mention that. So when you are trying to analyze a website, we've been talking about increasing token count size, right? But for e-commerce websites in particular, even if you strip off the CSS, even if you strip off the JavaScript, having the entire HTML in megabyte size is not unheard of.
Yep.
And that's where it's like, how am I supposed to solve this in terms from an AI point of view?
How many tokens would that be? Like,
oh my gosh. You could easily be looking at over 1 million tokens.
I see. But which is still too much even for today.
Yeah.
Did you look into making your own tokenizer?
That's something that we explored. I think what we found more realistic was to actually pass the HTML into a more token-friendly format.
Yeah, right.
So this way we can still build on top of the existing models. But yeah, we are exploring that as well. Okay. But back to the alternative. So like the key things for me and was at that point, and subsequently, I think I showed you like the experiments with like English compiler and things like that, right? AI agents generating code. You also have your own small there. Was that the context size is a real problem, and Transformer inherently by its nature, at least vanilla Transformer, I know there's Transformer XL and some other attempts, is that it quadratically scales with the context size.
Mm-hmm.
So if we scale to like, let's say 100,000, that's already requiring a shit ton of compute and VRAM. And I don't even want to imagine what happens to 1 million or 10 million. And that's where I needed, I was like, okay, this is a fundamental problem that needs to be changed. If not, we will not go past this. And I think there's also now like a lot of people who are very interested in like models that can handle large context size, because they also want it to be able to use in use cases where they never need to fine-tune, because fine-tuning is a pain, apparently.
Yes. That said, okay, well, there's issues with just throwing everything in context, right?
Like, yeah.
It's shown that retrieval is only best when the item that's relevant is in front or in the back of the context window. So it's basically, I'm just like, maybe we've just tapped out. Context is working memory, and maybe it's like, maybe transformers are very similar to humans in that a working memory is only of a given size. If you try to artificially extend it, you just make it very lossy.
Yeah. So that's where I ended up landing on the RWKV model. Because in that sense, right? So one thing that I always found very weird for transformers, but I mean it's by design, is as you infer each token, you were recomputing everything upfront. Mm-hmm. That's the quadratic part. And while you're mentioning about the working memory problem, in theory, with enough attention heads on it, mm-hmm. and people seem to be trying to cram more and more attention heads into the process, it could scale that way, ignoring compute costs.
Okay.
And yeah, ignoring compute costs is like just like a very liberal, let's just throw as much H100, it doesn't make sense. But RWKV was fundamentally a neural network at its core. It ends up scaling linearly as it goes through the tokens. It will still suffer from the memory issue. Within the RBKV, we do like measure two separate things. So like one, we call it the perfect memory. So in the model, we have only a certain amount of capacity where it can remember things perfectly, just like humans. And then beyond that, that is where it will start to discard things from its perfect memory.
Right.
And I felt that this was actually a lot more in line with our goals and commercially, and also what I felt was that was more useful in the long run because it's cheaper compute and it could be potentially parallelizable for a very long run.
Right. So we're going to go into our RWKV paper in a bit. Mm-hmm. But one thing I wanted to ask, you kind of glossed over how you found it in the first place. Because you're not a researcher. You're not like, I don't imagine you're like reading papers every day or something.
Until recently.
How do you find it?
How do I find it?
And how do you know like this is the one to bet on versus there's a bunch of other alternatives, right?
I think it was rather quick after I concluded that Transformer as it is will not scale to 10 million tokens.
Okay.
And
so, by the way, you mentioned Transformers XL. Yeah. We also did a episode on Flash Attention, which helps to make part of it sublinear at least.
Yeah, but that is like way, way after I already dived into RWKV. So history-wise, at that point in time, Transformer X, we are talking about like the when 4K was the limit that everyone knew.
Right. And this was last year. I mean,
yeah.
Just to set context. Okay. Okay. And then, yeah, so and you just kind of were searching around, you found our RWKV, presumably. Like, do you go straight into the Discord? Was it like primarily a GitHub repo? Like, what was it? Because as far as I can tell, there was no paper until maybe about 2 months ago.
Oh, and I talked about it before the paper, right?
Yes. So you found it before they did any publicity, which is weird. It's not normal.
Fair enough.
So what happened? What did you do?
It's a mixture of things because it's like, I was searching GitHub, I was searching like for forums, other Discords, and also like blogs actually. I was just like getting all the, everyone was just creating lists of lists, right?
Yeah.
And I believe you also have a list of lists somewhere.
Yeah, but mine is very, so I would consider myself very trad in the sense that I would just follow the large model labs. Whereas the kind of list that you have to follow in order to get to something like RWKV before they've done any publicity is the non-trad, like, you know, the kind of people that is now working on Louis Hermes, Wizard, you know, that like no credentials. I don't even know who the hell they are, but they're just working on it.
This is all foggy memory, and I might be hallucinating this because there was too many lists. But I believe the list that actually what brought me to RWKV was that beyond OpenAI's model and beyond ChatGPT and Claudia, the two big models, right? Outside of the English-speaking nations, right? A lot of the open-source models really fall flat.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why when you actually go through like lists for like doing things in other languages, RWKV actually stood out at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And just on the basic premise, and we're not even talking about architectural advantage, it's just the basic premise that they imported the data set in other languages, in the training data.
Yeah.
Because,
I mean, I imagine 99% of your customers are English.
Yeah.
Was that really a driver for you?
It wasn't a driver,
just trying to explain it.
Yeah, that's how I landed onto like all these blogs and articles.
And can you say, when you say fall flat, the main one that I know about is there's a tokenizer penalty for non-English.
Yeah, like, that's
like,
that.
Right, so like Chinese is up to, Chinese or Japanese or Thai or something, like it's like 16 times the number of tokens for a typical English sentence.
Yeah, but even before that, right? Because, I mean, yeah, I think you understand, like, a lot of community users, they want to not use the commercial APIs.
Okay.
So they try to find open source models.
Yes. And we'll talk about the not safe for work people. Yeah. I really want, because you've actually talked to them. I have never talked to these people. Okay. But, like, when I discovered them, they are, it's a huge community. They're extremely passionate. And they're actually
really
good.
Yeah, they're really good.
They're good at this. So let's talk about them, right? Yeah. But yeah, we can talk about it later.
Yeah, so they don't want to use the commercial models and they want to use the open source model. And there is a tokenizer penalty, which is true. But I think on the more fundamental basis, right, if you look through the data sets, and this is also partially informed because the way we set up our evals, all our evals are written in English.
Mm-hmm.
And at least for the majority of them. And if we are racing towards building AI models, at least right now, as you see all the companies as they build their open source model, and they just want to narrowly focus on the evals, adding in a foreign data set is actually a loss. Because as you, once you're below a certain param count, so we're talking about 7 and 14, right?
Yeah.
The more you add that's not in line with your evals, the more it will degrade. And and they just exclude it.
Yeah.
So the model
the priority is English.
Yeah. I get it. The model just fundamentally didn't support.
Wait, so what's the trade-off? Like, I mean, okay, so English and Chinese, or you know, there's all these other languages. What do you pick? Like,
so RWKB started with also in context, the main person leading the RWKB project, Bling, he's from China. So he naturally has an interest to make sure it supports Chinese.
Of course.
Yeah. So English.
And there are a fair amount of bilingual models, especially that are English and Chinese from the major universities in China.
So we started from basically English, Chinese, Japanese, Korean. Frankly, this is large part mostly because there were fans in those communities that came on board. And then subsequently, we tried to onboard other languages as well.
Yeah. But these people are, like, again, not researchers.
Nope.
No money. Like, training on their home GPU lab or whatever, right?
Partially true, but also how I see it works out for a lot of the other languages was that we have the foundation model, and this is the foundation model where we just kind of say evals be them. Let's just make sure to include all the other languages.
Okay.
And when we included the other languages, right, the model works for most parts for the other language. Subsequently, these individuals who wanted to use these models for their respective use cases will then fine-tune respectively.
Mm.
Because it's easier to fine-tune in another language for your use case than to train the language from scratch.
Okay.
And I think more recently, and this model is not 100% trained yet, more recently, RWKB has released what we call the world model, where we go the next step of even including all the translation data sets that we can find, even for minority languages that people and in our Discord. Because the long-term goal for us, at least internally, is that we wanted an AI model for everyone. And everyone does not mean USA. It means the world.
Well,
so there are a lot of languages in there.
Well, is it Asia biased, or you know, give me a sense of like.
It's probably, no offense, it's probably still going to be US biased in terms of like knowledge, because what we are doing is still power red pajamas for the knowledge.
Okay.
But in terms of language, we add all the other languages, wiki and translation set. So it's hard. I mean, we haven't fully evaluated the bias yet, but I'm quite sure that when disproportionately knowledge is still within the English universe, there's the bias there. But frankly, we are still at the stage where can support the other languages.
Yeah.
and I think I mentioned this is one of the interesting parallels that sometimes I have, right, is that I can see in the Illudio forums and all that, and then we're talking about alignment and like we're talking about it in very
which big... is yeah very keen on safety and all that, which is great, but like it's not your goal as the RWKB community.
Yeah, and when you talk to like members of the community that came on board, they're like, oh, I want to get this to work for Korean, Japanese, Thai, Arabic languages, and so on and so forth. They just want something that worked.
Yes.
They don't want it to be, they are not after the big model that does everything. They just want something that they can play with in their language. And that was very important to them.
Yeah. And these are literally just hackers doing it for personal enjoyment.
Correct.
Not yet for work.
Yeah.
Or maybe some of them for work. You don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, the whole character AI category, there's quite a number of them using it for that. So professionally.
Professionally, okay. As in, they run character companies,
Let's
call it. Should we pause here and then I'll switch to the screen?
Sure.
Okay. All right, so we have it pulled up. We are going to screen share for the bulk of this. So if you're listening on audio, it might be a good time to switch to the YouTube channel. So we're just going to start with an intro. What is RWKV?
So RWKV is a modern recursive neural network with transformer-like level of LLM performance, which can be trained in a transformer mode. And this part has already been benchmarked against GPT-NeoX in the paper, and it has similar training performance compared to transformer models of the same data set and parent count. So specifically the GPT-NeoX model. So The key thing is that even though it's matching in performance, well, trading blows with GPT-MU-X, it's doing all this without attention layers. And in the process, right, it's actually having a much substantially lower compute based on its design, and also because it's a neural network, which we'll dive into later why that's substantially lower in both training and inference. And this is back to, like I mentioned previously, Transformer, at least traditionally Transformer until we found out about Transformer XL and things like that, tends to scale quadratically based on the context size. And this applies not just in inference, but in training. Mm-hmm. And due to how this is still a neural network in its heart, even though it can train like a transformer, it's able to do so much more efficiently and faster. Especially like when you hit context size of 8K, 16K and above. And once you do like quadratic and linear, the differences start to like go
of course
crazy once you scale the numbers up. And that was the main benefits of the RWKV model, per se. There were a few prominent researchers, when they actually reviewed through the RWKV paper when it came out, they did highlight an important question of like, is this like evidence to literally, maybe all that really matters is that we need a large data set and a scalable model.
That makes sense, obviously, to some approximation. But you are still using attention?
No, we don't use attention inside.
Okay, yeah, maybe let's rewind a little bit.
Oh, specifically so attention as you understood it, yeah.
Okay, tell us more.
So we use weighted receptors and
if there's any diagrams I should pull up, let me know.
Oh, okay, so we are using AFT. So this attention-free transformer, and this paper was written by
what
Apple.
What the hell is an attention-free transformer? this is unusual.
Yeah. So we use the weighted retention weights and we compute over it. And in essence, this is like the classic like stacking more layers. Once you do on top of it, like you don't really need attention. Once you have enough weight and layers stacked on it.
Okay.
I don't know whether we want to go into the deep dive of AFT.
Sure.
But
interesting. I've never heard of this paper.
Yeah. So this was written by Apple, and subsequently we integrate at least Blink, the creator of RWKV, took this and applied it to a language model, mm-hmm. and scaled it up.
Right.
And that is how we landed on RWKV that doesn't use attention. So sometimes within the community we use the word light attention, because what happens is that these layers and these weights will still play the role of attention.
You end up approximating attention.
Exactly. So it ends up like looking at the tokens or parts of the memory and then applying it to the output. Mm. And the key benefits is that, because remember the attention models, the multi-head part, mm-hmm. it will need to scan all the tokens back and forth.
Yeah.
This removes that requirement. Mm-hmm. And hence, it reduces the overall compute count. Mm-hmm. I might be jumping back and forth a bit, but that's one of the key essence of the WKV segments. And we call it light attention. And this is the part where I will disagree with the RWKV communities in some parts. I think that was a bad name.
Nah, whatever.
because it's still...
Why is it a bad name?
Because when the RWKV paper came out, right, and then we talk about, like, we use this, and we call it light attention, but by design, it's really nothing like your existing attention head models. And... it ended up like sidetracking the Hacker Noon debate on like one corner. It's like, no, this is technically attention, approximating attention. Then another group was like, no, this is not attention.
I see.
but I'm like, propose a better name because I have no idea what to call it.
Okay. What else should people know? Maybe we can explain what RWK and V stand for.
Oh, receptive with the key values.
Okay.
Yeah.
And each of these are like actual things that you model in the code, right?
Correct. So we can go into that. So
which attention historically is a query key value.
Correct.
Okay.
So do you want to jump straight into the layer architecture?
Should we cover something else first?
Anything?
Anything like
high level, right?
High level. Okay, there's a 7B, there's a 14B, there's
a okay, score, so let's
one of the assets or the artifacts.
Okay. So on before we go into the nitty-gritties of how the layering and everything works, right? On the high level, right? Currently, RWKV architecturally as a model, it can be what we have already proven is that it can be scaled and trained like a transformer. Mm-hmm. How I do so, we'll cover later. And this can be scaled to as many parameters as we want. currently, what we have is a dominant, our main models is the 7B model and the 14B model, which you can find on Hugging Face or respectively our demos. We also have, that'll be the RWKV Raven models. These are also instructionally tuned.
Okay, so there's World, there's Raven, there's Music. Oh my God, there's Novel. What is all this?
Okay, so the current main models is RWKV 4 the Power and Raven. So Power is basically just a Power Plus model.
What is Power Plus? I know about Power, but what is Power Plus?
Random data sets that the community threw in the Power.
How many tokens worth?
I would just say slightly 1.1 or 1.2 times the Power.
Okay.
Yeah. This is not instruction tuned.
Okay.
And stuff. Yeah, the plus one is typically all the other languages. Okay. Subsequently, Raven are the instruction tuned model. This is the current main complete models. We subsequently have...
And the instruction data sets are from?
Typically GPT-4, but then we scrub it for and remove all the SLR model.
So yeah, this would be the uncensored. There's some other project that's kind of doing something similar, and they call it uncensored, but really they just scrubbed it as SLR language
Correct.
Model stuff.
Yeah.
So that makes it technically breaking TOS of OpenAI, right?
Yeah.
Okay, but yeah.
But that's a... I mean...
That's a later problem.
Listen, frankly, let's be honest, if we don't remove it, someone is going to remove it.
I mean, so there's ways around this, which is you get clean data sets that are not GPT-4. Like, so the one that I typically mention is Yannick Kilcher's Open Assistant.
I believe that was included subsequently as well.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously all these release orders are all over the place.
Yeah.
So, Raven World.
So Raven is the instruction tuned model.
Yep.
There. And then subsequently, the World model is a new model that we are training. It's not 100% complete yet.
Okay.
With the focus on a new tokenizer and all the languages. All the languages that we can grab from the internet. All the wikis in all the respective languages.
Like, what do you mean when you say all languages? 100 languages. Okay, fine.
So 100 languages. It wasn't really a very precise science. We just basically whatever the wiki tool that allows us to download the X wiki languages. If it works, it's in the set. If it doesn't work, skip.
Yeah.
And major prominent Oscar translation sets. So as you can see, Pow, Red Pyjamas.
Right. What is Oscar?
Oscar is just a common term that we use in. You can just search Oscar in Hugging Face dataset, and it just means translations.
Okay.
So you can find like English X pair.
I see.
Yeah, all the respective pairs.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and then all ChatGPT data I can find.
Okay. So 70% English, 15% multilang, 15% code. Is there a strong grounding for why 15% code?
No. It was already there.
Yeah.
So the focus of the World model was not to improve everything else. Okay. It was literally that 15% multilang. We wanted to increase.
It was English and code, and then you just added multilang.
Yeah, we had maybe a multi-line, but we wanted to bump it up.
Right. So this is primarily English? Whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. What I would like is like basically like a visual of like, here's all the building blocks and here's how they combine to create all these things.
So we have the RWKV architecture code.
Yeah.
So that's the main model building block. Then basically we feed it the data. Power Plus, Red Pyjama, then subsequently some of the code data. For the World model, we subsequently add on top of that all the translation Oscar sets and so on.
And so you're training these things. You've mentioned that you're intentionally taking a hit on evals, on traditional evals like MMLU or whatever.
I wouldn't say intentionally. And also to clarify, like, I am not training it.
Yeah.
I'm just part of the community.
Of course.
The community and Blink is the one training it. But I would say it's more of like the lack of care for the evals. So the reason why we add things to the dataset was never about improving evals. It's about directly in response to user feedback.
It's like, oh, not good enough at this. So like, okay, just throw it in.
Yes, literally along those lines. And so take for example, right? Like for Raven and the World model, as we go through the training stages, right? We specifically ask people in other nationalities within our Discord community to test it for their language. And our rule that we set is that informal rule is that the only person can decide if whether this improved World model is better in Japanese or Thai or whatever it is a native speaker.
Yeah. Where does it take place?
So it's mostly in within a linguistic sense, but sometimes we do a short talk in general as well.
Okay, linguistics. Yep. So why don't so do you have like a appointed ambassador? Like you have 100 languages.
Yeah.
Do you, you just have like a czar of Japanese, a czar of Thai?
It's not so pointed. It's more of like, hey, this is the Japanese model. Please try. It's not.
But that. There's no the Japanese model. There's one model. There's world model.
So if you go to world model, I don't know whether it's inside here. No, four. Sorry.
Five.
Five is. You should never put five on top because five is fully experimental.
Okay.
So under files and versions.
I see.
So there's you see there's a Japanese specific tune.
Yeah.
Chinese tune.
Arabic.
You know, then for all the other smaller languages, we actually ask them from the base world model itself. So feedback on that. So we actually released previously like 10% train, 15%, 20%. Like as it goes through the stages and then it's like, hey, is this working?
Yeah.
Is it regressing? So it's like evals, but
done by real humans and not systematically. Is there a reason that you release, so you mentioned 7B, 14B. But I see also 0.1B, 0.4B, 3B, 1.5B. Like, what is that useful for people, or
is it
just for research? Or
0.1 and 0.4 is frankly more for research. But some people do try to make use of them. Nothing stopping them.
Well, I mean, it's extra. Like these are just different architectures, different dimensions.
Yeah.
So it's actually extra cost to you to provide these things.
Oh, but specifically for the world model, because we are trying a new tokenizer, And the reason why we're trying a new tokenizer is that one thing that we found, more like I found surprisingly frustrating in the existing tokenizer was that it was very English-centric.
And the existing tokenizer you took from GPT-Neo?
Yeah.
Okay. And just to, I need to backtrack a little bit, just for people who are not following along. GPT-J was the original Luther reproduction of GPT-3.
Mm-hmm.
And then GPT-Neo was the bigger GPT-J?
Yeah. You can pretty much
20B, something like that?
Yeah, I do believe they have a 20B model.
Okay.
And for those outside of the open source space, in particular for the transformer, I think one thing significant for GPT-Neo X was that it was one of the major models that had everything fully documented and they, like, why they make this change in the architecture and so on and so forth.
Mm.
And that became like a basically reference notes for all other subsequent open source models because they were the early ones that were doing a good transformer model.
Yeah.
And at least for the large language model.
So GPT-2 was actually open source. People didn't find that useful?
No, people do reference it as well, but it's like the code is there.
Uh-huh.
And why did you do this?
Oh, I see. It's not documented.
Yeah.
So in that sense, was OPT from Facebook useful? Because I've heard very good things about the logbook of OPT,
mm-hmm.
where they had the daily logbook and they just published that.
Yeah, those were useful as well.
Yeah, okay.
I think one thing that NeoX had going for it, especially the Illuminator community, is that it's not just logbook. It's just like, you could just go to Discord, hey, why do you do this?
Right. And the person who trained it will tell you.
Yep, someone there.
Hopefully.
One of them. So that's why we had the 0.1 and 0.4 models because we were just in uncharted waters here. So a lot of existing tokenizer took space as a major delimiter to detect and split.
Mm.
And the tokenizer we are using is actually a lot more simplified. So existing tokenizers, they scan all the text. They do a statistic model of like what pairs well with what and so on and so forth, right? We did a similar approach, but we instead of using like this token pairs well with this and should be paired with that, we just made it a trio list. So basically we find
the data structure.
Yeah, correct. Okay. So we just find the longest matching string in that matching string that we have trained inside our token list,
uh-huh.
and then we just use it as the token. It's a drastically simplified tokenizer, and it doesn't use spaces as an assumption, which I know...
Which is good.
Yeah, and that helps a lot of the Japanese, Chinese, and character models, because they don't have spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And I would even argue to fair say, like, if you look at, like the really large models, like be it OpenAI or Claudia, right, tokenizers are not really a thing. I mean, in the sense that the model can work even if you tell it character by character. It's maybe inefficient.
Has someone tried?
I mean, there was that jailbreak where, you know, the system prompt, you put the character, then enter. Do you remember that jailbreak?
No, I didn't see that one.
Yeah, so you can literally, like, instead of, like, left to right, you can literally up to down.
Okay.
And you're just eating tokens for every character. No, actually, you're eating two because there's also the new line. and the model understood it. Because there's enough dumb data on the internet that it has learned how to deal with this kind of formatting.
Got it. Okay.
And if these models are already understanding things at the character level,
okay,
everything else is just improved compute.
Okay.
Because we jump the multiple tokens.
Do you have any idea of your dictionary size when you use this tree data structure?
Yeah.
Because the typical tokenizer is like 80,000 tokens, dictionary size. I presume yours will be bigger.
Yeah, it's around, I can't remember offhand, our previous tokenizer is around 50,000. It's the new X tokenizer. Then subsequently, I believe this is around the same size.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
We didn't want to change too much on that size, but we just wanted to just change the format.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. I actually kind of want to establish the credentials of this thing. So who is Blink? Is it Randall on the internet? Or because again, never heard of this guy until he published.
Yeah. That's his real name.
Right. And you had, I have this paper to work with, but it was only published in May.
Yeah.
You found this before the paper. And so I think it's very unusual for a researcher to effectively launch to the wider public without a paper and just get some kind of pretty decent community going and then publish the paper.
I think a few years back, when GPT-2, Transformers started to pick up steam.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the whole world is starting to think, let's just abandon neural networks. So we haven't even gone into the code part, but so the main reason why neural networks were bad compared to Transformer was that when you train a, let's say you just input a token and train a token for data sample, you have to wait for the compute to finish for that token, take the state, and then you train the next token.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into how RWK resolves that. But basically the whole world at that point just concluded, yeah, neural networks, it cannot scale as well, Transformer, let's just abandon it. And everyone just went in that direction. And Blink, or Bo Peng, his actual name, decided basically as an individual, literally at the Eluter AI forum, decided that, hey, I think we can modify neural networks based on the Apple paper, the light attention that I showed previously, to make neural networks scalable and parallelizable in the same way Transformers work. Because the reason why we branch away and focus on Transformers is because neural networks were slow to train. It wasn't so much about whether was it good or bad. It was just, no one wants to wait 100 years for their billion tokens to train finish, even if they can throw a GPU farm at it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he started looking into it, how to make the neural networks trainable in parallel. And
specifically RNNs.
Yes.
Okay.
And subsequently, the AI, and I believe there was also a few others, because he was doing it very publicly there, came on board to sponsor the GPU computes required. Because even though I mentioned that on large context size, it is substantially cheaper, I think, especially if you run an open source Discord forum for an AI model, that every day there'll be someone who thinks that they can train a 20D model on a single GPU coming in. The scale is still large, even though it's like 1/5 or 1/10 compared to Transformer, it still needs a lot of GPU. So that's where AI and the rest, Stability, I believe also is involved, stepped up and donated the A100s needed to train the basic models that RWKV had. Before those models were trained, right, we were only having in theory the toy models or the small models that this can match Transformer. We have no idea whether it can match Transformer at that
scale.
Yeah. And subsequently with the larger models, the 14D models and all that, and we can compare it directly with new X model. And that's where this paper came out. So that's the history behind it. It's he wasn't really doing it in silence. He was doing it from Eluter. Then he branched out. Because this became a big project on its own.
Mm.
And that's where other people started coming in as well. So the part where we say that RWKV is a neural network that can be scaled, can be rolled out as a transformer, right?
Yep.
The key thing that you would want to see, right, is this diagram here.
Yep.
And this should be in the paper. The other one. Yeah. Accordingly. So when you are running inference mode, ideally you should run it as a neural network. So this is a layer. So classic neural networks is that you have a state. The state could be start from blank. You process a token, you output a state, and then you rinse and repeat. And then as it keeps doing the output, it makes a prediction. In that one thing that so subsequently for RWKV, what happens here, right, is that we can roll out this neural network side by side, and then it runs similar to transformer. But the key thing here is that the states are split across the layer. So this is what we call, in this diagram here specifically, this is what we call the timing and channel mix. These are operations within the layer. Depending on how long you view it, you could view this as individual layers, or as how we view it, we view like this collection of layers as one layer block. And each layer block pass the states to its sibling subsequently down the road as you process the next token.
Which is a similar RNN type.
Correct.
Feature.
However, the key thing is you do not need to wait for the upper layers to complete before you can go to the next token.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens in practice, if I were to jump to the diagram, like there's this graphic here. This is not 100% how it runs behind the scene.
I like it.
Yeah.
Whoever put time into this, kudos.
I made it. Nice. Yeah. So this is how you can visualize it. So this, the first layer is the layer norm. The layer norm doesn't, this is standard layer normalization that it doesn't need to, it just does it on token and doesn't need to wait for the other layers. But if you notice, right, subsequently to the right and to the top, these tokens, these blocks, right, need to wait for the blocks on the left.
Sure.
And this is like, once you go past the first few tokens, right, this cascades very rapidly, especially like this is only like 1, 2, 3, 4 layers. Most models have like 20, 40 plus layers, and the cascading patterns are happening. And in practice, once you start cascading there, you just saturate the GPU. And that's how it starts being parallelizable to train. You no longer need to train in slices like traditional RNNs. That was one of the key things.
What else is the key thing?
Other things is that, so I think you're familiar with LSTM, right? This is how like traditional neural networks keeps things within memories.
Mm-hmm.
Within RWKV, we have two channels. We call it the channel mix and the time mix respectively.
Is there a formal definition of channel mix and time mix?
Yeah. You can see the data from the respective time mix and channel mix move to the next segment. How time mix is designed, per se, was that it's how it retains, similar to LSTMs, right, where it processes a state and the input, it may decide to discard certain states and keep new things in the state. Time mix does the same thing, but with a different formula. So it replaces the LSTM, mm-hmm. in a sense,
mm-hmm.
and it can decide to keep things indefinitely. So this represents a long-term memories if you want to view it that way.
But classically, the problem with that is that it struggles with long distance.
Correct.
Does it have the same issue?
So that's subsequent. It struggles with long distance because it also needs to keep track of both near-term memory and long-term memory.
So you split it up.
Yeah, effectively split up. So channel mix is
subsequent. Is this the perfect memory?
Yeah, this is the closer to the perfect memory than is the short term. So time mix, it has trainable weights on what it decides to keep and discard.
Okay.
Channel mix, it has a very strong bias in it towards like just the next token. So subsequently it will just like as like memories are stored in the lower layers, it just slowly shifts upwards through the channel mix. And this is the short-term memory,
mm-hmm.
which at some point, as it just shifts all the way up, it will just disappear into mm-hmm. the void.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, subsequently, then time mix should be retaining the longer-term memory.
So we took a break for a bit, but now we're trying to cover, like, what is the big aha moment for you? And you said it was something to do with cost.
Correct.
So we have this chart on screen. There's literally a chart of quadratic scaling versus linear scaling in terms of GPU time spent in text generation. And you said it was at training time and at inference time? Like just basically in everything that matters.
Correct. So look back to how RNN works. From a high level, we do an O1 operation. on a token, create a state, or one operation, create a state. So this just scales linearly. You want to throw 1,000 tokens at it, it just, for, on inference, it just scales linearly. Subsequently, for transformers, you take in a token, you process your first token. It may be O1 here. Subsequently, when you generate your third token, you need to compute your second and first, and then vice versa. So you do your 1,000 token, you need to compute back your 999 previous tokens. And as this keeps growing, this is your quadratic scaling. And this is why we had this graph of the amount of cumulative GPU time that you need to spend to generate all these tokens respectively.
Mm-hmm.
And this is fundamentally just transformer versus neural networks. Yeah, on inference. The reason why, and subsequently, like, neural networks did have the disadvantage of, let's say, not being able to parallelize well in training. But as I covered, RWKV kind of solved that by effectively splitting the layers, allowing you to train different parts in parallel. And like, some people will go into the academic debate of, like, technically the second and third token is not parallelizable until the first is done. But once you get into, like, I can saturate a GPU land,
yeah,
it's
way better.
It's just academic debate. We are done. And so training, in essence, has always, I mean, this is be it for transformer on neural network, is I need to do an inference pass. I look at the logits. I backprop to see what went wrong, and I update the weights. Yeah. So the inference is the forward pass. You still need to, it's part of the training course. As you backprop as well, like, having needing to only look at the current cell tokens and the state instead of, like, everything also reduce the amount of things that you need to backprop. So it's just that, it's like, there's so many factors involved in just reducing the overall inference and training time. And that was something that appealed to me, because in the long run, I mean, all of us want our model to just run blazingly fast, right?
Yeah. And also on minimal hardware.
Oh, yes, Dan.
Which, as far as I understand, you still have 14 billion parameters. That's not going away. You still need the RAM to store 14 billion parameters worth of stuff. That's not going away.
Yeah.
Okay. So RAM is unchanged.
Yeah, on the RAM side, but the working memory is reduced. So typically, you need more than 14 for transformer. I mean, let's not touch quantization.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, we don't need to keep. Like, if you really, really want to, like, save RAM, it is possible for you to do token by token inference so that you don't need to keep your states in history. You only need to keep your current token state and your next.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And yeah, and that's actually, like, one segment of our community, just purely porting RWKV to C++ based model.
Or in the next.
Yeah, and running it on Pis and stuff.
Raspberry Pis.
Yeah. It's interesting to watch.
Yeah, there's a chart about performance, and it shows that RWKV is competitive or actually better in some of the reasoning challenges, which that's something I definitely would look for, right? Like, and it's fine if, like, your speed is faster and all that, but if the reasoning quality sucks, then it's not a very useful language model.
Exactly.
So
this is, like, literally us saying there's
no trade-offs.
Yeah, you don't lose out in that process.
Okay. Big question then. Why isn't RWKV a bigger deal right now?
So, one, we are not a commercial organization.
Okay.
This is literally the pure open source play. So,
but you could have done the Stable Diffusion thing, which, you know, Stable Diffusion launched. It was by a bunch of nobodies before that.
Mm-hmm.
It's from, like, literally split out from Luther. And but they definitely had some hype. They definitely, like, you know, I interviewed Sharif Shamim. The reason I ask you so many things about how did you find out RWKV, because I think the generalizable skill is how to be early in AI. Because being early in AI is very valuable. Because then you were there to see how things developed instead of, like, picking it up later like me. Anyway, so, yeah, why is it not a big deal?
You want me to be frank?
Yeah.
We just suck at marketing.
Okay. That's fine.
I mean,
this is part of it.
Yeah, this is part of it. Yeah. Like, so, like, maybe.
But I don't think that is entirely the cause.
Yeah, I'm sure, definitely. I think the other major segment right now as well is that we were really late on the paper.
Okay.
Like, one of the weirdest thing right now is, I feel that is that RWKV is starting to have its moment right now.
Okay.
Is that ever since that initial paper came out, there was ResNet, there's a few more additional papers coming out, one from Microsoft, one from other organizations that are literally exploring the whole idea once again of scalable neural networks.
Okay.
And they are citing RWKB as part of it as well.
Okay.
And I think for most, I think it's existingly, why switch to this model when, even though we have proven that yes, it's scalable to 7 and 14, and that it can match transformers at similar param and training size, but all this is very academic, because the community at large, especially for the English speaking community, right, they don't really care about this. They care about what's the best model that I can run on my computer, at least within the open source space. And by that, and even though we match in performance for things in the same data set, the keyword is same data set. Like, this benchmark is not, it's not even red pajamas yet. It's the power.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have models that are like, be it like Falcon, being trained on much larger data set,
mm-hmm.
Especially for an English use case, it makes more sense to use that.
I see. So there will be another paper coming that is RWKV trained on Red Pajama.
And that will presumably be a larger data set. Yeah. Okay. And so on and so forth. So I think we are still in the stages of reaching that point where we train on the larger data set.
Yeah.
The only reason why we have a bigger outsized impact compared to like the other models is frankly because half of our Discord came in not for English. It's for other languages.
Yeah, that's great. And there is a definite very US and English-centric bias towards these models. And it's to me, kind of poetic. Like, there's nothing in the architecture of RWKV that particularly biases it to be really good at other languages.
No.
It's just that as a community, you decided to prioritize it
yeah.
in your tokenization, in your data sets. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. I would even argue that I'm more surprised that, especially on the European side of things, that we don't have more models that actually focus on even the European languages, because that is like a softer jump to character,
yeah.
Japanese and Chinese
right,
characters.
Because they're all romantic.
But I think back to the benchmark, what excites me most still about this is that it just means that we just need to scale. We just need to scale this model and with the right data.
To like 40B?
40B, 60B.
Yeah.
I mean, params is one thing, it's data sets.
Okay.
And GPU time.
Yeah. So you and I will talk offline about ideas for getting data, getting compute, and all this. Okay. So this is like a project that's ongoing. Okay. Anything else for the future of RWKV?
The biggest one would be... Okay. So this is back to how... Remember I said... Evals doesn't highlight everything. Being realistic on another weakness on RWKV side is that now with the rise of like let's say 100K or 32K context size windows, transformer model, RWKV currently is trained to handle let's say 8 or even some people have already trained it to 16K
yeah.
sizes. It has, and well, it will, as a neural network, it will happily keep going on for infinite context length. It will just keep generating. Does it do well? That's the answer is no, because if you didn't train it to handle that situation, and there's actually a chart. So, for example, if like the prediction, the power test loss, right, it does improve over time, let's say if we go down the context length, but this is if we train it. And what is not seen here is that if we were to do let's say run it further, it'll just go back up, because it was not trained to handle that. Well, it technically can run, it suffers from the longer context length, and that's the part where RWKV, especially in like Q&A tasks, in huge documents, like you get Claudia to summarize giant documents.
None of this is fundamental. It's just you need more money.
Yeah.
That's it.
And there is actually a fundamental part. So what one of the things that I was doing, and I am actively helping within the committee right now, is that we found that the existing way to scale the memory was not that efficient. And we were just being realistic on ourselves. If we want to hit 100K, we need to change this. So one thing that I'm actually looking forward to right now is actually those experiments. We have already started scaling things to be able to handle things at transformer scale, be it the 4K, 8K, in terms of like how it handles memory really well. And we want to like extend it to be like 16, 32, and 64. And we that is within our roadmap. And that's the exciting thing, because once we have that, like it able to handle long-term memory within those sizes, it removed what many people in the community felt, right, was the last architecture limit. Because once it's able to handle memories like context length with the same as transformer, we no longer need to do all the, like, you know how existingly like people do like long conversation in transformer, they just discard the rest and the sliding window. This is like the better version of sliding window. You have the model can handle the sliding window perfectly. Well, it can keep remnants behind it.
Sure.
And that's something that I'm really excited and invested towards, because this is back to the full circle of what, how I came into RWKE. I want my model to handle 100k tokens, 4 megabytes of HTML, whatever I throw at it, and be able to process it.
But it'll be lossy.
The later half will be lossy, but the key thing is extending the non-lossy part. And we are aiming to extend the non-lossy part.
So, you know, you have displayed today an impressive amount of knowledge just like across the, you know, all this stuff. And you don't have like a research background. Your advice to AI engineers getting as deep as you, who want to get as deep as you?
So I think your article articulated very well that there's going to be divisions within how we approach this. So AI engineers, model trainers, and dataset curators, and ML scientists. So I'll loosely define as a tree. I ignore the full stack because every company needs it. So within this tree space, there is actually a lot of ways anyone can come in without knowing anything. So let's just start with AI engineers. Don't be like, even though this whole topic, we even dived into how the layers work, we also showed how the math works. Frankly, for an AI engineer,
yeah, not required.
You don't need it. Your main thing that you needed to do was to, frankly, just play around with ChatGPT or all the alternatives, be aware of the alternatives, just be very mercenary, swap out to Claude if it's better for you, or swap out to an open source if it's better for you, and just play around the prompts. Learn bare prompting techniques like one shot, two shot, few shots, and then from there on, you can start building your agents, stacking your prompts and in sequences and stuff like that, and you are able to build applications that do anything in terms of the AI space. And all this without knowing all this nerdy stuff, or the hard engineering, because that's all you really need to actually build a product for the user. Remember, you are supposed to focus on making it for the user. They don't care if it's RWKV or Transformer underneath the hood. They just care that it helps them. And I would say like Notion probably is like probably one good example of how they use it, because we know underneath the hood is OpenAI, but it's really useful
for the user.
Yeah.
No, but so I obviously agree with all of that. Let's just say that people are there already and they're just curious. They want to do what you did.
Oh, so that's where you start going down the layers.
Yes.
So the next layer you go down in is subsequently training the model from scratch, fine-tuning and encoding the data set. And this is where you still do not need to know the math, but you need to know, like, you need to have a rough sensing on how the model works and how the certain models, and in this even within the open source transformer space, certain models are better trained in certain sequences with certain learning rates, and you just need to get a feel of it. So this is just like, collect the data set, try it, see the loss.
You literally did this?
Yeah, at least for RWKB and the
That's a lot of work.
Code gen models. Yeah, it's not a cheap work too, because you need GPUs.
Okay, and that took you how long?
Oh, I think I code gen alone was like 6 months, and then this RWKB, I've been doing this for like another 6 months. Okay. And that is it's just pure experimentation. Like, there's no right or wrong, because like, especially if it's in a different domain, like recently I was like helping someone on the RWKB Discord regarding the music generation domain, and my assumptions for learning rate and all the patterns, right, were just completely thrown out the window, because the music model just fundamentally is different. Mm-hmm. In those sense. So that is the exciting thing is, because it doesn't really have any specific rules and guidelines until you get until you trial and error to a certain space, it also means that you coming in is as fresh as anyone else coming in last year. It's really that kind of uncharted space for everyone, and especially as you start exploring to new domains, your existing knowledge may actually matter, because sometimes like I mean, I think a few papers already covered this, that like how you train your model in certain sequences also matter. Like you want to train a certain set of knowledge and then you extend that knowledge subsequently. But if you're talking about material science or genetics, how am I supposed to know what is foundational knowledge and what is extended knowledge? I have no idea. Maybe you do. I'm just picking an example. Yeah. So, and the same thing for music and so on. So those are things where even though you're outside the space, it's where you can come in just at the data set level. Now you want to peel off to the next layer, let's just say. Let's just say you want to look into modifying the model, the foundations of it. I think one of the beauties about this current boom is that even though I dip my toes early, like before the transformer wave and into the early neural network phase, frankly, almost everything that matters was basically in the past 4 years. Like, there were a lot of things that be in academics that were before that, and they were mostly dealing with models that were under a billion parameters. They pretty much no longer matter. And
can you be more specific?
Like, okay, I know I'm shooting myself in the foot because RWKV is a neural network, but if you're just trying to get transformers to work, you don't need to know LSTM.
Yes.
Yeah. You don't need, there's a lot of like pre-knowledge in neural networks that is irrelevant in the transformer era. And maybe some of it will have a resurgence, but to get up and running, it's not a requirement. And I think this is where you could either go the very academic way of reading papers and stuff, but frankly, what I found was way more useful was Akabati. Yeah. His series of videos.
Serious a Hero. Yeah.
Yeah, that is really, really good. I think even though I read some of the papers and guides before that, it really helps that it starts from zero because you can see how it happens part by part. And even though we will not use how the exact same code that he used because like he re-implemented the back prop and all that, and we are just going to use Torch for that. Yeah, that's where you get the aha moments on how these building blocks work and how it fall into place. And like I had fundamental misunderstanding of how back prop worked until I actually watched his video.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. And I think that's the scariest and craziest thing about AI models sometimes is that you can actually have fundamental misunderstandings, but as long as you make the building blocks and you connect, and okay, loss is great. It works.
And yeah. Well, so, you know, even the gods of the industry, you know, I don't know if you read the Swigloo paper. So there's these like there's all alternative activation functions, like mm-hmm. there's ReLU, and then there are, people are always looking for different slopes. And very famously, the Swigloo paper had this line in there that was like, yeah, we don't know why this works, but it works. Can't explain it.
Yeah, it literally happens here and there, you know, on Discord too. One of the funny things that I'm doing right now in RWKV 5 experiments is that, okay, we are going to do this change, where we're going to run this train, make your prediction. Will this model beat this model in this loss curve?
As a game? As a betting?
It's a very informal... Yeah, yeah. It's literally a buddy kind of like...
Right, kind of bet,
but... Yeah. The fact that we can do this kind of bets, even though we like understand the code, it's like it just goes to show like how often like, oh wait, this didn't go what we predicted.
Yeah.
No one and that's why even if let's say you don't have a PhD or so on and so forth, right? Heck, even if math is not your specialization, you're coming in as a developer. I'm gonna say frankly, like I didn't come from the research right now. The extremely math heavy stuff is what I struggle with.
Mm.
What I do sometimes is I copy and paste the math into GPT-4 and ask it to explain to me.
Which is good.
In plainer language.
It's very good at that.
So yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah. And so, but the thing is, there is lots of value add beyond that. One thing that I realized, and this is not specific to RWKV, this also happens across a lot of open source models, is that a lot of ML scientists, when they really built this stuff, the focus was more of like, always get it to work. It was never about getting it to work efficiently or getting the code documented or organized.
Mm.
And Stable Diffusion literally went through this whole journey. They had the code and the model that worked.
Mm-hmm.
And the community just started and engineers that came in with zero machine learning background started picking it apart. It's like, no, this dish, you could replace this with this that does the exact same thing, but it's more efficient. Like, one of the major breakthroughs, for example, for GGML recent, and this happened some time back for a bit, Llama models and all that, was that while someone external from the AI community went in and implemented memory mapping.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah. I forget her name, but yeah. Justine.law is her URL.
Yeah. And she didn't come in as an AI expert. She came in as a software engineer.
Yeah.
And
these are all just very, very straightforward. You know, in her world, this is normal. Whereas for the researchers, they will be like, yeah, I don't want to.
Wait, what is memory map?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and there are a lot of things. Like one of the jokes that I have right now is that every month there is a research ML scientist that is rediscovering the number 32.
Why?
Because, be it like, or someone in the committee writing the inference code. Because GPUs, especially CUDA, NVIDIA GPUs, tends to work really well when they align to the batch size of multiples of 32.
Oh.
And if you've been in the gaming industry, especially when you write shader code, right, this is like well known, like just given knowledge. And people are just constantly rediscovering, oh, maybe if I just adjust my data set or my data size to fit this batch size, suddenly I get 10% improvement. And it's like, these are things that, once again, because they were so focused on just making it work, that they won't know outside of space. And that's why I would say, right, if anything, right, now is the best time if that you don't know AI to have people from different backgrounds come in, because your contribution could be from data set level, how to train the knowledge, to shader code, to hack, how to memory map, how to cache data. There's so many gaps.
Cool, great. So yeah, thanks so much for being very willing to get on and talk with no prep. Well, yeah. We did some prep, but it's very unusual podcast episode, but I really enjoyed it.
And we literally just met yesterday in Singapore.
Well, but I know you've been on the Discord for a while, and I can tell you like you're very serious about all this. I think it's very unusual for someone, like you have a job, but this is like a second job, essentially.
Yes.
You know? But you are really enthusiastic and passionate about it, and I think that's very rare, and I do want to encourage more people to do it, and so thanks for sharing.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for having me here.